now.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Head On with Bob Kincaid today, whether it be the early part of the afternoon or the middle part of your morning, or God knows the middle of the night, wherever you may be listening to the Head On Radio Network stream provided by the White Rose Society and our very good friend Ben Birch. This, of course, as I said, a special edition of Head On, brought to you as ever, as our good friend Brian Reznor noted, by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They are indeed building the American dream. I'm Bob Kincaid, and what we're doing here is a special remote live broadcast. I, of course, am sitting here in the last tiny foothills of the Appalachians in northwest Alabama, while my cohort, Bruce Birch, is in the Raleigh County Armory there in Beckley, West Virginia, joined by a very good friend of ours, Dr. Bill O'Brien. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, Bob.
Hey, Bob, how's it going, man? Man, it's really great to have a daytime show on this network.
Yeah.
We may have to do this more often.
Yeah, this is kind of neat.
Step outside, there's real sunlight. It's real. It's a beautiful day here.
It is fantastic. Bob, we're not going to mention the radio station, but we just had your former boss stop by the table from the station that shall not be named.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to send you all the best, and that he hopes everything works out with Dad. So, just wanted to relay that to you.
Wonderful, that's great.
I think the name is Voldemort.
Yes.
Voldemort.
Yeah. I know the name well.
Anyway, it's a beautiful day, and there's a lot of people here in the armory. It's a gorgeous day, and a lot of booths. We've got about 75 or 80 booths set up here. We're one. We have a lot of people coming by picking up these little brochures about internet radio. Your computer is your radio, and it's kind of exciting.
It's very exciting, and just because the listening audience, Dr. Bill, is well familiar with Bruce and familiar with me, let's get them equally familiar with you. Tell folks a little bit about yourself, please.
Oh, boy. Well, here goes the 3 hours. Not really. I'm an educator. I'm a historian. And for the last 15 years, I've been here in Beckley. I direct an off-campus center for Concord. It used to be college. It's now university. We have a center here in Beckley that serves about 600 to 650 students a semester. I've been here for 15 years. I'm looking toward retiring, and I started to look for other things to do 4 or 5 years ago, and I approached the station that will not be named. With a proposal, and I basically I filled in on a talk show there for a couple of days on a Friday and a Monday, one day, so that the regular host could take a long weekend, and I really enjoyed it, and they seemed to think, they contacted me and said, you ought to try this. So I wrote a proposal, and basically what I said is, I won't take any money, I'll try it, I'll do it every afternoon for a couple of hours, and we'll see what happens. And so I did that, and almost 4 years up until this past October. And then I gave it up and been working on my job full-time and doing a few other things, and was married a month ago. And,
congratulations, Bill.
Yeah, so it was great.
You need to be on your honeymoon. You don't need to be down here.
Well, going in June. Actually going to take a trip up to New England in June.
Oh,
but,
wow.
But I didn't realize how much I would miss the communication of radio. I've been teaching college for 35 years. And I found that I could do things and accomplish things on the radio that I never was able to pull off in the classroom. And so I really believe, and I still believe, that this is not only a communication media, but it's a media to lay out discussions and compare points of view and those kinds of things. And I don't think it's at all tapped. And I think this particular medium is just awesome in its potential. I would like to find a way to contact God and get a contract and work it out so I could stay here for another 100 years to see what happens with this, because I think it's awesome. But I'm very, very privileged to be here, and Bob, I thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here.
Oh, well, it's entirely our pleasure, Bill. If I could just step in for a second, you mentioned the upcoming trip to New England. Just so folks will know, that's kind of your old stomping grounds, isn't it?
Yeah, I grew up in Boston, right in the city, and went to the local public schools, graduated from high school, and then went out to the Midwest to graduate school, and that was in 65, and really kind of never looked back. I have a brother and sister up there, and I go up there every year, year and a half to visit them. But basically, I've been gone from New England since the mid-60s, and I came to this area, to Concord College, in 1971. It was my first teaching position after graduate school, and I taught there for 5 years, and then I did a number of years in Richmond, Virginia, and then came back to Beckley in 91 to open up the center here in Beckley for Concord, and been here ever since. So,
well, you know, you talked about the medium not being tapped, Dr. Bill. What we're trying to do here, and I think you will enjoy it, because, you know, there's a lot of talk radio out there, but what we're trying to build here is conversation radio. An opportunity for people to really be heard. So I think you'll enjoy yourself during the course of the day. I'm sorry, Bruce. I didn't mean to step all over you, brother.
You know, Bob, being stepped on by you is an honor and a privilege. So, but I was just going to say congratulations to getting married, and
thank you. That's fantastic.
And
I'm really excited.
And I'm kind of excited to be sitting here. I've heard so much about you, Bill, that
I got to tell you, and this is personal, and I don't want to make the thing morbid, but 4 years ago, my wife passed away, Christmas Day, in fact, of 2002.
Wow.
And I was doing the radio program, the talk show in the afternoons, and it was the first year. It was the end of the first. I had started in January, and this was in December. And if it hadn't been for the fact that I had to get on the radio every day live and talk to real people and get myself up for it, I don't know whether I would have been able to handle that. But it was just the idea that she was probably the greatest encouragement for me to try this. And then once I did it, it was the program itself that made it possible for me to get through it. So I have a love for this medium that's a little bit unique. But I do. And Bob's distinction between conversation and talk is a real one. There's talk radio all over the place. There's very little conversation that goes on.
Well, and I think we sitting here today, we're going to have a little bit of background noise for folks. So if you hear that, understand that we're sitting in a convention center. I'm looking around, and there's a big cavernous roof that is bouncing all the noise right back at us, which is kind of fun. But you know, one of the things that I thought that was really cool about this is that once we got here, you know, the reception has been very, very positive. And you know, the first thing that people are asking us is this like Rush Limbaugh? And when we say no, they grab a flyer. So, you know, folks are definitely interested in this medium, and they're definitely interested in hearing a different point of view than what is being espoused on the current right-wing radio. Bill, I wanted to ask you, though, what have you been doing since you went off the station that shall not be named?
Well, I still am working for Concord here in Beckley, and I direct the center here in Beckley, and interacting with students and dealing with students and doing all the things that are associated with that. I'm also getting it back into my discipline, into the 18th century.
Okay.
I took a research trip to the Midwest about a month ago. I'm going to try to do some rewriting of my dissertation and do some publishing, maybe some speaking, and I've got a number of things that I'm considering. But I'm probably going to retire in December, primarily because as I'm doing that job, I can't do some of the other things I like to do. This is one, you know.
Right.
I can do this for one day, but I can't take a block of time. In fact, I'm very, very appreciative of the fact that I was allowed to take a couple of hours every afternoon for 4 years and do this. Of course, because it was a local station here, it benefited the radio station as well. It's benefited the college as well.
Sure.
So that's what I've been doing a lot of reading, staying up, not reading quite as carefully as I did when I was on the radio every day.
Really?
That's interesting. It's a difference. You want to know, I still have a passion for knowing what's going on, but you don't read as carefully and you don't digest it as carefully.
Right. Pay attention to the details as
exactly.
much.
Right, exactly.
Right. Bob, I'm going to let you jump in here, buddy. I just wanted to, you know, sort of get my voice out there. I know that we are presently going to be... here till 3 o'clock, and as folks come by, and you know, we may pull a person in and have an interview off the street, Bob. What do you think about that?
I think that would be a blast, Bruce.
we might do that. We'll pick some interesting person that walks by here. Most of the most interesting ones have already been by, but no, we'll. This is really great. Bob, I got to tell you, this is magic. I'm not a technician, and this way and make the sound this good. The quality of the sound is superb. I just think it's all magic, and it is.
We were talking about that on the program just last night, Dr. Bill. You might as well call it magic, because I've never seen an electron, and you know, an atom is beyond me. But for some reason, everything is hooked together and it works. And Agnes is doing a lovely job back at the head-on studios in our remote, undisclosed location in Fayette County. She tells me that we have a caller on the line.
Oh, Bruce, we have a caller.
We do. We certainly do. I believe Jim is on line one. Jim, how are you doing, man?
Hey, Bruce, how you doing?
Hello? I'm doing fantastic, but I will get better.
Good, good. How do you like the armory?
Hey, we love it. We love it.
Good.
Is this a gym that I know from a previous life?
Bill, I'm not going to say. I can't say.
Yes.
I'm calling from a...
How are you, bud?
I'm calling from an undisclosed location, Bill.
Are you really? Well, you sound great. How are you?
Well, I'm okay. And how are you?
And it's very, very well.
And it's good to hear your voice.
Well, thank you. It's good to be able to interact with you again. This is great.
Well, we had some interesting times back there, and I certainly missed talking with you because it was a voice of sanity, I can tell you that. Mine may not have always been, but yours certainly was, and you were very indulgent with me, and I appreciate that. I really do, and I'm glad to hear your voice again, and I'm so happy that you're remarried. I've heard that from several people, and
thank you.
I know that that's going to make a lot of difference in your life, and you have an awful lot of good things to look forward to and a lot to contribute.
Thank you. I appreciate that. As far as the political scene nationally and internationally is concerned, Jim, every once in a while I think back to some of the conversations we used to have. We were pretty much on target, weren't we, Jim?
I think so, unfortunately. You know, there are sometimes when, you like Cassandra, you know, people don't pay attention to you, but unfortunately, you know, there are a lot of things coming to pass that we've talked about that appear to be coming to pass, and I just hope there's some way that, you know, good sense will prevail. Right now I'm worried about what Mr. Bush is trying to do, circumventing 750 laws and then this business with Iran. And, you know, it just seems like that just about everything that can go wrong will go wrong. Of course, when you say that, something else will happen, you know, God forbid. But a lot of things were predicted on your afternoon show, and a lot of those things have come to pass. I guess some good, but mostly bad things. That's been pretty unfortunate, yeah.
Well, the scary part is that a lot of it was pretty certain. It's just that people didn't want to see it, and now they're seeing it, and they're very disturbed by it, as I am.
And you know, the thing about it is, Dr. O'Brien, is this. A lot of them, even though they see it, they still refuse to recognize it for what it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the thing that, you know, you're going to find some people that simply, no matter what the situation is, they're not going to reform. They're not going to admit that they were wrong, and they're not going to admit this, that, and the other. And they're going to still think that when they see George Bush drowning kittens, they're going to say he's giving them a baptism, you know?
Okay. I know. Well, anyway, it's not good, but it sure is good to hear your voice, Jim.
Good to hear yours, and I'm glad to hear that you are, like I say, moving forward, and, you know, you're going to be writing, you said, and rewriting your dissertation.
Yeah, I'm writing.
And, well, you know,
yeah,
at least you're not in a publish or perish type situation, and that's good. So you're writing for the love of writing, correct?
I'm looking at an opportunity to going back into the 18th century and doing some things on the Constitution, actually.
Oh, well, that sounds interesting.
So, what particular phase of the Constitution do you plan to concentrate on, Dr. O'Brien?
Well, my dissertation was on the state of Maryland and the whole struggle over ratification and the first federal elections, but I'm looking at trying to make that a little bit broader. I'm very, very much interested in the whole issue of the Bill of Rights and the founders and all of that. And of course, it's big now, and I feel like I need to use the opportunity to get back into it and try to do a few things with it. So,
well, you know, I think there's some people who live in the place right over the river from Maryland who might could
yeah.
use a good lesson in the Constitution because they seem to have forgotten it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree,
Jim. That's a very good point, Jim, and something I had wanted to ask Dr. Bill about at some point in the program. I have railed at length. Well, I tell you what. Agnes is telling me that we need to take a break. So with that being the case, let's keep our powder dry for a little bit. And but please don't let me wander off somewhere. I want to talk to you, Dr. Bill, primarily about the unitary executive, because this thing just makes the little hairs stand up on the back of my neck.
Okay.
May I interject one thing before you leave?
Do please,
sure.
Jim.
When you talk about unitary objective, I think about the Enabling Act that was passed before the Reichstag, which gave Adolf Hitler unparalleled power. That's what it reminds me of, to tell you the truth.
And one would be hard-pressed not to be reminded of that, because it's the same sort of power grab, isn't it?
Well, it is. It's legally, that's the way he came to power, and that's the way, you know, one of the worst regimes in history established itself, little by little, law by law, inch by inch. They took power until all of a sudden, one day, they said, here we are, and we're not going to leave. And that's what's scary.
And we're going to do what we want.
And anyway, listen, thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate the time, and it's good to talk to you, Bill. And you have my very best wishes at heart, you and Mrs. O'Brien.
Thank you.
And may God bless both of you.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate you.
Thanks a lot, Jim.
Yes, sir. Good night, gentlemen.
Good day.
Good day. And, of course, the phone number is easy. If you want to jump in on the conversation, it's 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. Email is easy as well. Of course, mine is bob@headonradio.com. Bruce, how do you want folks emailing you there?
Bruce@BruceBurch.com, B-U-R-C-H, Bruce@BruceBurch.com.
And, of course, any email remarks for Dr. Bill can come to Bruce as well.
Sure.
So, I tell you what, here in about 2 minutes or so, we're going to come back and have a constitutional conversation with our good friend Dr. Bill O'Brien. Bruce Burch is there also in the Raleigh County Armory in Beckley, West Virginia, live can be, here in the last little foothills of the Appalachian Mountains in northwest Alabama. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is a very special edition of Head On.
DeLay, indicted for criminal money laundering, pocketed tens of thousands in campaign contributions from indicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff, 48 trips to golf resorts, 100 flights aboard company jets, 200 nights at world-class resorts and hotels, $1 million from Russian tycoons to allegedly influence his vote. $1 million from Russian tycoons? What else will we uncover about Tom DeLay? It's time for DeLay to resign.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know... One small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
Don't you know? Talking about a revolution sounds peaceful. Don't you know? Talking about a revolution
sounds peaceful. Back on with Bob Kincaid, and Bob's here, but I'm going to talk to Bob for a second anyway. This is Bruce Birch, and we're coming to you live from the Beckley Raleigh County Convention Center, and this is and sitting in with me is Dr. Bill O'Brien. Say hi, Dr. Bill.
Hey, how are you, Bruce?
I'm doing great. I did want to sort of mention, you know, when we went off to our break, we heard an ad, and that ad was actually the ad to ask Tom DeLay to step down. And folks, we're going to keep running it in hopes that he never comes back to political life ever again. So, Bob, are you still with us?
Oh, I'm right here.
Okay, good.
But, okay, well, so Bob, I know that one of the things that you were talking about before we went over to the break was the Unitary Executive, and actually during the break, Dr. Bill and I had a little bit of a conversation about some of the Founding Fathers and their ideas about what the presidency of the United States should be about. I'd like to also, before we get too far into that conversation, I'd like to also remind folks that this live broadcast is being brought to you under the auspices of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream, and ladies and gentlemen, they're building it today here at the Convention Center. Bob, you want to go ahead and go down that line of conversation there?
Well, I rather would, Bruce. Dr. Bill, what has I guess what really gets under my fingernails about these Republicans and this concept of the unitary executive, apart from the fact that if I were a Unitarian, I would be very, very upset,
right,
is this pick-and-choose approach that they seem to have to the Constitution. Because on the one hand, you've got people like Antonin running around the country saying that, well, you know, if it wasn't expressly stated by the framers, you know, sort of like the express permission of the commissioner of Major League Baseball, that it's not in the Constitution.
Right.
And
right.
Then you turn around and you've got, well, you know, you've got the PNAC crowd, and I think a lot of that genesis was with them, talking about the unitary executive, and by that, as far as I can gather, meaning that as long as the president says time of war, that he can make the Constitution up out of whole cloth and vest unto himself powers that I don't think were ever contemplated by the framers.
No. The tremendous fear of the presidency, and again, I think the best example, the best response I can give, Bob, is that the Constitution replaced the Articles of Confederation, and the Articles of Confederation did not have an executive. I mean, there was kind of an administrative council of representatives of each state that made executive decisions on call. But basically, the founders, in the 18th century, they were so afraid of the strong executive that the Articles of Confederation didn't even have one. And I think that's very significant. So therefore, when the Constitution was being discussed, there was a tremendous amount of concern about the power of the executive. The only thing that sold it, that appeased people, was that there was general, unanimous agreement that the first executive would be George Washington. And everybody, and basically it was him, it was his presence and his persona that basically got this through. The fact that he was able to soothe people's concerns about the fear of the power of a runaway executive. And of course, The background to this was George III. The background to this was George III, and they had seen an executive gone wild, at least in theory. And so there was a tremendous fear of the power of the executive, and thus the idea of the checks and balances system, and was hopefully in part to try to contain the danger of a runaway executive, and of course that's what we have right now, and that's why this whole perspective of a war on terror is creating an environment which we have an executive right now that's moving in to take advantage of that. And I don't think it's the person. I think it's not just the President of the United States. It's the people who are pulling the strings behind the President of the United States. I really believe that.
Well, there is a group of people, Dr. Bill, as you mentioned, behind the presidency, who want to see, for reasons that I can't quite comprehend, the executive power broadened. But the linchpin, it would seem, in this is a manifest failure on the part of Congress. It strikes me, in times past, even if the president was a Republican and you were a Republican, there were Republican members of Congress who were more jealous about the status and the power of Congress than they were about their political party. And it seems that that has all gone out the window.
Right. Right. In some of the classic studies of the presidency, for example, I'm totally drawing a blank on the name, but there was a study of the presidency that was done. Clinton Rossiter did a study of the presidency. He talked about the various roles that the president played. And one of them was head of party, was the titular head of the party, whether it was the Republican or the Democrat. That has become extremely significant now because party labels have almost created a situation where dissent within either party is, but especially in the Republican Party right now, dissent is not condoned. I mean, there's an effort to destroy the very existence of what we used to call moderate Republicans. Olympia Snow and that ilk of Republicans right now are not really considered Republicans at all. Arlen Specter, for example, especially now that he's talking about having hearings on whether, in fact, the president is abusing the power of the presidency. Arlen Specter is persona non grata as a Republican now.
And well, not only that, but if I may interject here, the idea of Arlen Specter actually holding realistic hearings is a joke. You know, Bill? I mean, this guy what I'm trying to get at here is that, throughout the entire last 5-6 years, this man has done nothing but hold these hearings that are farcical in nature.
Right.
You know, he says, he has this get tough attitude, and then he stands up there and squelches dissent. He stands up there and won't allow certain testimony from the floor from the Democratic Party. You know, and him actually, I'm going to hold hearings on this. It's like saying, okay, well, we may as well go out back and talk about it and have a cigar, because that's the kind of result we're going to have.
I think the one thing that I would say, not in defense of Arlen Specter, because I agree with you, Brutes, but the one thing I would say is that at least Arlen Specter recognizes that if you don't have the illusion of hearings, if you don't create the illusion that Congress has a role to play, has a role to play in this, and that's what concerns me, is that many of the people in the Republican Party who are most opposed to Arlen Specter don't even want to preserve the cover anymore.
I know.
And that's scary.
That is absolutely reprehensible. Bob, I didn't mean to step on you there.
No, that's quite all right, Bruce.
But to me, it's the semblance, and I think it's what's amazing to me is that this current president came to power riding a wave of sentiment all about the rule of law. And now that he is president, as Jim so aptly put a few minutes ago on the air, there have been over 270 signing statements added to laws that he has signed. He hasn't vetoed anything. He's just said, I'm not going to follow them.
Right.
Can you imagine he is the first president since Thomas Jefferson not to exercise the veto?
Yeah. Yeah.
I find that amazing. We are also up against the break, so let's go ahead and take that. I hope this discussion, and frankly, I hope there are folks out there who will get in on this as well. The phone number is 877-4-HEAD-ON. 877-443-2366. It's very easy. Bruce Birch, email again, please.
I'm sorry, that would be bruce@brucebirch.com.
bruce@brucebirch.com, bob@headonradio.com. To get email to me, anything going to Dr. Bill needs to go to Bruce, since they are together on this, first live remote broadcast on the Head On Radio Network for Head On, with me, Bob Kincaid, although Bruce, of course, has been intrepid and goes around the country. He was in Los Angeles, Southern California, just last week, and I think we would also be remiss to if we did not remind folks that our other compadre, John Fox, comes to us every Saturday night in conjunction with Bruce from Sydney, Australia. How cool is that? So after the break, we'll be back and continue the discussion. This is Head On. Bruce Birch and Bill O'Brien are in the Raleigh County Armory here in Alabama. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Been to the playground lately? If you have young children, you should take a look. Even though kids have been swinging and climbing and teetering for generations, playgrounds still manage to injure 500,000 kids each year. Check for hard landing surfaces, sharp edges, and broken equipment. Outdoor play is healthy for kids, but a playground that's unsafe and unsupervised can quickly become the pain ground. For more on playground safety, visit orthoinfo.org. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. They say it's from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote, and then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. And when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of mannequinism and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight mannequinism.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
In the beginning, there was dirt, water, and air. And it was good. Once, Planet Check.
With gas prices skyrocketing at the pump, there is a cheap, renewable alternative fuel.
Rudolph Diesel actually designed the diesel engine to run on vegetable oil over 100 years ago.
A diesel engine that runs on used vegetable oil?
We get the used vegetable oil from fast food restaurants.
It's called biodiesel. Joshua Tickle, author of From the Fryer to the Fuel Tank, explains.
Biodiesel is a clean-burning diesel fuel that's actually made from vegetable oil. It's usable in any diesel engine. You don't have to modify the engine. You just pour biodiesel right into it.
Pour some veggie fuel into that tank.
The environmental benefits of biodiesel are that it's cleaner, it's healthy for humans, plants, and animals.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
Presentation being brought to you under the auspices of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. We are broadcasting live from the Convention Center in Raleigh County, which is in Beckley, West Virginia, at a business, the 13th annual business expo that is being presented by the Chamber of Commerce here. And I would say in studio, but we're not in studio right now. We're sort of out in a very large studio, very large cavernous studio.
It's an armory where they hold basketball games, and everything echoes, and it's hard. The announcements, the public address announcements, are very, very loud.
It's like, you know, they echo about 15 times, and by the time that they're done, by the time they start giving the announcement, you know, or by the time they get to the end, you're just hearing the end of the first part of it. So
I consider myself self to be the luckiest this man in baseball, ball.
Yep.
Or do you remember what was that guy on baseball? Been very, very good to me. You remember that Saturday Night Live?
Chico Escuela.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, I think he's now a carpenter. I'm not sure. But we're going to we were talking before we went over to the break about the interesting theories of presidential power that he seems to have adopted and brought into play. Are there any presidents, Dr. O'Brien, that have exhibited the same kind of almost empirical control?
Well, the one that people would jump to right away would be, well, there were two. I guess people would probably say Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War and FDR during the New Deal. Yeah, because extraordinary circumstances have traditionally produced situations where executive power, people look to executives when they feel threatened, which is why the whole concept of the War on Terror is so scary, because basically it creates an environment which is conducive to people's willingness to concede power to the executive. I mean, that's what happens. And in Lincoln's case, for example, I mean, he violated rights of habeas corpus and everything during. And Lincoln goes down in history as amongst the many people the best president we ever had. Probably the only competition it'd have would be FDR. Same thing. And people will point to the fact that when it was perceived in 36 and 37 that FDR was trying to pack the Supreme Court, the people bucked. In other words, that's cited by a lot of historians as proof that the people are not willing to give unlimited power to the executive.
Right.
If anybody had a shot at it, it was FDR because of the New Deal and efforts to deal with the Depression. But there were even limits to FDR's power.
Right.
And that's the thing that scares me, is that the War on Terror creates the environment which is conducive to a concession of power and a willingness to believe that we are threatened.
You know, and just to follow that up, I think also that FDR and Lincoln, you know, although Lincoln was a Republican at that time, that party was progressive at that time, was it not?
Yes.
So, you know, those two, even though they did sort of wield that kind of power, they wielded it with much respect for the will of the people,
right,
as opposed to what this president is doing. We do have, however, we're going to go over to the phones real quick. We do have a caller on line one, Ben from Elgin, Illinois. Are you there, buddy?
Yes, I sure am.
How are you doing?
Hey. Hi, Ben.
Well, hi, Dr. Bill. Nice to actually talk to you. I've heard you a few times.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
It's
nice to talk to you.
Why, thank you. You know the one constitutional issue that is bothering me most right now, of course there's so many to choose from, is that George Bush signed a law that had not been passed by both houses of Congress. And I'm wondering if you know whether that has ever been done by a president in the entire of American history, and whether you think that rises to the bar of a high crime or misdemeanor.
Could you repeat the exact issue itself? It's a question of a law that's been.
There was a law that was. There was a version of a law passed by both houses. The conference committee had not yet met to resolve the differences between the two versions.
Right.
When the president signed the version that had been passed by the Senate into law. So
I don't know of a precedent for that, to answer your question.
I mean,
it's very, very consistent. It's very, very consistent with this idea of offering executive opinions when you sign laws as to what they mean, or whether, as Bruce was pointing out earlier, whether you as president say, I'm going to sign this, but I don't plan to obey it. I mean, to my thinking has always been that in itself is an issue. You know, when the person that stood there with his hand on a Bible and took an oath to uphold the laws of the United States stands there when signing them into law and saying that he doesn't plan to obey them, I find that, you know, I personally find that offensive.
Yeah, completely reprehensible. Ben, Ben, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I think, you know, as I was listening to the discussion, one of the things that crossed my mind is that, you know, we have to, as a nation, at some point we're going to have to enforce the Constitution, because I think what's happening, or what I'm seeing happen, is that this president and the committee of people that are actually governing, you know, with him as the figurehead, are using this line of reasoning that they can interpret the Constitution any way they choose, and therefore that allows them to get away with murder or torture or rendition, or you can go on down the list. And so the way that I see, the only way that we can enforce what the actual tenet of the Constitution is to bring in a standing majority of folks who are going to hold him to account. And really, you know, we've had discussions, you and I, about this, and Cup of Joe and a bunch of other folks, that the only way that's going to happen is to get folks into the House of Representatives and you know, bring about articles of impeachment.
Well,
but I think
there's a good question in my mind with this particular president, whether articles of impeachment would remove him peacefully. I'm not entirely certain that he either intends to leave office in January 2009 or that he would leave office if impeached.
You raise a very, very interesting set of possibilities there, Ben, because I wonder, I mean, you can create a situation where people would be reluctant to change horses in midstream. And he's in a position to create those very situations. I agree with you. And I think people's willingness right now, people don't want to go through another impeachment situation. And so there's an inclination on the part of a lot of people to kind of poo-poo the whole idea of impeachment as being some sort of a liberal devil or something that's never going to really surface, when in fact it's very, very real. The impeachment, the grounds for investigating the possibilities of impeachment right now are much more solid constitutionally than they were in the Clinton situation.
Absolutely, and I don't want to like step on Bob, because I know Bob wants to get in here, but one of the things that Bob Kincaid said on his show, which is 7 to 10 on this very same network every night of the week, besides Saturday and Sunday, is that, you know, if people are tired of impeachment, and if people are tired of the idea of impeaching the president, then the president doesn't need to commit impeachable acts. And that would solve that problem very quickly. And it's not a matter of political partisanship. It's a matter of holding to the rule of law. It's a matter of being equitable and fair, and it's a matter of being just. And if this president, or any other president for that matter, can't do that, then they don't deserve to hold that office.
That's right. That's right. That's a very simple solution to the problem, is it not? But it's not going to happen. And I think... And I agree with Ben that there's a pattern here, and the pattern has been to push the envelope in terms of the Constitution as far as you can possibly push it in this administration. And I think it's evident in the controversy over the court appointments, over the Supreme Court appointments. It's very, very obvious. One of the major differences between this president and Lincoln, and there are a lot of differences, obviously, intelligence and everything else, but one of the major differences historically is that Lincoln, as far as he went with the issue of habeas corpus during the Civil War, never advocated or never attacked the court as an institution. He talked about putting people on the court who would buy into the issues that he was concerned about, but he never attacked the legitimacy of the court itself. This president does.
Yes, he does.
Well,
Bob, you still with us?
I can't wrestle my dachshund to keep him quiet any longer, so I'm going to sign out and just listen, guys.
Okay.
Thanks
a lot.
Thanks, Ben.
Okay,
thanks,
bye.
Appreciate it.
Bye now. Okay. Oh, I've been here all along. It's a pleasure for me to sit back and listen to conversation along these lines because, you know, I'm by myself on the show and we take calls and everything, but just to be able to have interaction, I usually work solo. This is wonderful for me.
You know, this thing about the power of the executive is so interesting because we're experiencing it now. And as Bob, I've been teaching history for a lot of years, and one of the things I never really could understand in the classroom is why people at the time that certain things happened went along with them. You know, that's one of the things that really amazed me. You know, hindsight obviously is perfect. And you look back and you look at the situation and you say, why didn't people at that time say something? Why didn't they stand up? You know, why didn't the slaves revolt? You know, this the ultimate question.
Sure. Right.
You look at this situation right now, and if you're able to stand back a little bit and listen to some of the rationalizations that people are giving for what this president is doing, you begin to understand the hows and whys of why people in previous generations didn't do this.
I think you're spot on, Dr. Bill, and that takes me back to one of the crucial issues that started this particular line of discussion. That being, on the one hand, it is argued that there is no right to privacy in the Constitution because the Constitution does not expressly say there is a right to privacy.
Right.
On the other hand, there is a right for the President of the United States to willy-nilly wiretap whomever he wants, and as part of the reporting requirements of the new so-called more circumspect Patriot Act, and of course I think that's probably a fraud, there was reportage to the Congress the other day from the FBI that they had tapped into no less than nearly 4,000 Americans' bank records, private personal data, all by means of a national security letter. So I have a hard time in my own head putting together the idea that the president can order wiretapping when it doesn't clearly is not stated in the Constitution, and yet somebody can't make medical decisions about their own body because it's not stated expressly in the Constitution. Do you see what I'm
right.
saying?
Yeah, and that's Scalia's position on privacy. Is that
right.
You know, if it's not there in black and white, then it doesn't exist. And that's a very convenient.
Unless of course it applies to one of his hunting trips.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
I think Bob, we need to take a break. I've been cued by your lovely wife, to take a break. Ladies and gentlemen, we are broadcasting live from Raleigh, Virginia. And with me is Dr. Bill O'Brien, who is a history professor and works for Concord University here locally. My name is Bruce Birch. Bob Kincaid's down there in Alabama. And we're going to be right back. If you want to get on the program, dial us in. 1-877-443-366. Bob at headonradio.com or Bruce at brucebirch.com. Give us a shout. We'll be right back.
Somewhere another plan. Now he's got a rifle in his hand, rolling in a bag, then wondering how he got this far. Just another poor boy off to fight a rich man's war.
Can you imagine a world without children? A world without their smiles or their laughter? A world where children don't play or sing or dream or imagine?
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, we can't imagine a world without children. That's why we're working every day to find cures for diseases that strike down children everywhere. Diseases like cancer, pediatric AIDS, and sickle cell. And we won't stop until every child is cured and every disease is defeated. Because we can't imagine a world without children. Can you?
Finding cures, saving children.
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. To learn how you can help, call 1-800-931-0800 or log on to our website, stjude.org.
Hello?
Louise, it's Ralph. Listen, would you go out with me tomorrow?
At 8? Ralph, I'd love to.
Well, I have an appointment with my orthopedic surgeon, and I really want you to come along.
A doctor's office? That's so special. Oh, I just remembered I have to delete some emails.
Come on, Louise. We're going to talk about the pain in my hip, and I could use a little support.
I guess I'm not very hip.
You could take notes and help me remember stuff. Look, I have all my doctor questions written down, but there's so much to remember. I need you there with me so I don't miss anything.
Couldn't we just play miniature golf?
Louise, I'm not asking for a kidney.
Bringing someone to your appointment is a good way to make sure you and your physician are on the same page. The idea is to partner with your doctor and share information so you can make informed decisions together. For more on patient-doctor communications, visit orthoinfo.org. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons.
When it rains, all my friends go away.
God doesn't like me anymore.
The wind could come and take your house.
Santa won't know where to find me.
Mommy scared the sky.
What's going on in the mind of a child who's lived through a hurricane?
You can drown in your bed if you fall asleep.
A lot. Talk to them. Reassure them. We can help. Call 1-800-789-2647 to make sure they move on healthy and happy. That's 1-800-789-2647. Trained and caring people are ready to assist you 24 hours a day. It's confidential and free. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. This is a very special edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, joined by my good friends, Dr. Bill O'Brien and Bruce Birch, in the Raleigh County Armory in beautiful Beckley, West Virginia. This special edition, as is all programming on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn, brought to you by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Remember, they are building the American dream and saving the American dream by virtue of their support for Conversation Radio. Now, during the break, and sometimes things just sort of grab me. Guys, I'd like your thoughts, if you please. Did you hear the PSA about asking questions of your physician?
Yeah, I did. Bill had to go on a coffee run.
Well, that's okay.
I had one before and I spilled it, so I got another one.
No more coffee for you if you spill that next one, Bill.
Yeah, okay. That's coffee abuse. Bob, tell us about the commercial there.
Well, what I gathered in there, this idea that you need to be prepared for your doctor visits is very much the truth, and I'm experiencing a lot of that down here. I'm going to a lot of doctor visits with my father. He's 81 years of age, in great mind, and not so well physically right now. But right. I have done what they're talking about in that PSA, and what I would like to see happen in this country, and I think it's a function of the healthcare system as a whole. I don't know how many doctors out there really, really want that level of participation that is being pushed in that PSA, to be quite honest. Because I did that sort of thing, and I'm a sweet guy. And I got a little bit of resistance from the physician in this particular instance. And I just wonder if in fact people understand, and there's a reason for this PSA to exist, if people understand how important it is to be able to communicate with them, and how much in fact the intimidation of seeing a physician who flies into your examining room for 5 minutes and flies back out again, how much that plays into the whole health care crisis in this country, because I was operating under an assumption that, you know, gosh, if you've got health care, well, you know, you've got half the battle licked. Obviously, it's not true.
You raise the question about whether doctors really want that kind of input. I think that there are a lot of them that don't. The progressive ones do, but there are a lot of them that don't. They see it as interference. Of course, a lot of this is perpetrated by advertising. I mean, there's so much medication that's advertised on television, Bob, that, you know, and they're always saying, you know, ask your doctor if this might be right for you. Ask your doctor if such and such. And basically, it's confusing people. I think it's confusing people into believing that they can self-diagnose in a lot of cases. And I think a lot of doctors find this very, very threatening. I don't know, but that's my perception. I don't know how many doctors really want a serious conversation with somebody. In your case, you know, with you.
Yeah, and that's the point. And the thing is, the other thing that always bothers me about these kind of things is the unstated premise inside PSAs like that, Dr. Bill, that, you know, well, heck, if you're sick, you can just go to the doctor. That is not true in it's not just Bush America. That's not true in Clinton's America or any other president's America. We lack a fundamental commitment to see to it that people who are ill can go to the doctor, which, oddly enough, in the rest of the world is viewed as a human right.
That's right.
That is odd. I wonder what those people are thinking, providing health care and trying to help people. That's just terrible, isn't it?
It is, and it leads to a larger investigation that I hope maybe we can get into in the next hour, and that is this notion, and I know you've heard it, Dr. Bill. I heard it there in the bad old days of terrestrial radio. If you start talking about the ability of everybody to go to the doctor when they're sick, the first thing that will come out from the hard, weird, loony right wing, you know, that little knot of people that still think George Bush is a great guy, that's communism. You heard that, haven't you?
The argument that I hear is, whatever you might find fault with about our medical system, it's sure better than a socialist one. You know,
and oddly enough, Dr. Bill, last week I spent time with a very good friend of mine who is from New Brunswick, Canada, and I asked him that very question. I said to my friend, I said, listen, I said, I hear all these bad things about how the healthcare system is terrible. I said, tell me what your experience is with it. He goes, well, we get to go to any doctor we want, and we can go pretty much any time we want. What else do you want to know?
Yeah.
And I said, well, that's not what they're telling us in the United States. They're telling us that there's 6-month waits and all this. And he says, no, that's, you know, yeah, if you live in a very heavily populated area, but you're going to get that in any doctor if you live here.
Right.
If you live in a heavily populated area. Right. So I think that's all, you know, it's all red herrings. Again, it's the doctor lobby trying to, you know, keep the Porsche, right? Right, Bob?
I think so. So I take it we are on top of the, we've made it through an hour of this, guys.
Yeah.
So let's take that top of the hour break, and we'll come back after a couple of minutes, some messages, maybe a little hip music, whatever. And we'll go into hour number two and perhaps talk a little bit about the medical community, the medical system, in conjunction with a story that I've got sitting here that I hope we can share. This is a very special edition of Head On, coming to you live from the Raleigh County Armory in Beckley, West Virginia, as well as northwest corner of Alabama. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be right back.
Standing in the middle of life with my pants behind me, but I got a smile for everyone I meet. As long as you don't try dragging my bag or dropping the bomb on my tree, come on, baby, or get in the road. Come on now, in the middle of the road.
Hello, may I help you?
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
Oh, it's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Speaking of thievery,
yes.
Just want to let you know that Alistair Cook, okay, last year, right?
Yes.
He died of lung cancer that spread to his bones. He was 95 years old. Apparently, his bones have been or were stolen. Apparently, there's a ring of people out there that steal bones. They steal these bones and they make dental implants. Apparently, now he had cancer all in his bones, right? But the people who stole the bones rewrote the paperwork to make it look like he died of a heart attack. So now there's somebody else walking around out there with his diseased, cancerous bones in their body.
That is freaky.
Yeah, but I just thought it was so...
Oh, my God.
I thought it was so ghoulish.
It just freaks me out. Anyway. Hey, don't forget to join Bruce and I Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time for the next edition of Fourth Estate Radio. Get the streaming details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of six U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send... something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of my grandmother is also my lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
She had to go like 3 miles out of her way because Bush was there visiting. And he had his whole entourage and Secret Service, and they were blocking off the road, the highway that she has to take to get to work.
The Bush got you down? Let Grace and Rama Homebodies get you up every Sunday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern right here on the Head On Radio Network and homebodies.ramabahama.net. We'll trim the mess for you.
This morning, I suddenly realized we're all in this together. I started smiling, 'cause you were smiling, and we're all in this together. I'm made of atoms, you're made of atoms, and we're all in this together. And long division just doesn't matter, 'cause we're all in this together. Yeah. king in the city where all is together. The city's changing, 'cause we're changing, and we're all in this together. Every 12 seconds, someone remembers that we're all in this together. In the kitchen of your rent control apartment, we're all in this together. Come on, baby, I don't mean to rush you. I only wanted to reach out and touch you. I've got to start to open my heart. I know you think about jumping ship before it sinks, but we are all in this together.
In addition to Bruce Birch and myself, there's John Fox. He's in Sydney, Australia. Joe Vecchio in Atlanta, Georgia, of the Cup of Joe radio program. Grayson Rama in Vermont of Homebodies. Quite a little collection of personalities and opinions. Not all of which always agree. That comprise the overall efforts of Conversation Radio on the Head-On Radio Network. And if you want to get in on the conversation this afternoon or this morning, depending upon where you are, please feel free to. This is not ego-driven radio. This is not the right-wing echo chamber. This is the discussion that America desperately needs to have, and you can be part of it by dialing. Who dials? 877, the number 4, Head-On, 877-443-2366. Prior to the break, we were talking a little bit about, well, it's a crisis. Yes, it is. It is a crisis. It seems like everything that this administration has touched has become, in fact, a crisis. We were talking about the health care crisis. And just to give you an idea, I don't know about the bird flu thing. I don't know if it's real. I don't know if it's, okay, tinfoil hat. I don't know if it's a CIA conspiracy. I don't know if they unleashed it on it. I don't know. But I do know that apparently it has been pre-Katrina'd, the bird flu. And this is from the New York Times of a day or so ago. Flu plan calls for limited federal role. That's what I mean by pre-Katrina. Although the federal government will stockpile 75 million doses of antiviral drugs and 20 million doses of vaccine to combat any outbreak of pandemic flu, local governments and individual communities will have to shoulder most of the burden in battling the disease, the White House said May 3rd. The far-flung nature of a pandemic, as well as the sheer burden of disease across the nation over a period of months or longer, means that the federal government's support to states and communities will be limited in comparison to federal aid for natural disasters like earthquakes and hurricanes. Oh, my God. They just said that if the bird flu breaks out in the United States, the White House's response is going to be worse than Katrina. Bruce?
Is that a pre-Katrina mindset? Is that what's going on?
I don't know.
It's a post-Katrina mindset because they know they're going to blow it, so what they're doing now is preparing us for the fact they're not even going to try.
That's pretty sad, man. That's just, oh, my God.
But this is from the gang that says that we can't have some sort of universal health care because it would be evil? I can't get my mind around the way these people operate, guys.
I have a question, and that would be to Dr. Bill. Is criminally negligent homicide a high crime and misdemeanor?
I hadn't thought of it in those terms, but I guess initially I would probably say yes.
How many people died in New Orleans, Bob?
Do we even know?
The last number I heard officially was somewhere in between 4,000 and 5,000, I think.
Yeah. And that doesn't even begin to include the bodies that were never found, the people who are unaccounted for. Right.
Right.
And I think
Can a case be made that they were criminally negligent in this in that debacle?
In other words, taking it a step beyond failure and incompetence.
Correct.
That's an interesting concept. I hadn't thought of it in those terms. I thought of that in terms of Iraq. But
and I can't help but think, going with your line of thinking there, Bob, I can't help but think that if a pandemic does explode across the United States, as is being predicted by nearly everyone, that the same response will happen.
Oh, I have no doubt. I mean, they have told us point blank that they're not ready and they're not even going to try. Right. Now, you know, you talk about criminal negligence, that kind of thing. Dr. Bill, it is true, is it not, that under the constitutional framework, if the president commits a crime, any crime, from capital murder to jaywalking,
right,
the only remedy for punishing him for that crime is impeachment, correct?
If you insist on punishment, right. You either impeach or you don't. Those are your options.
When you become president, you don't get a pass to become a serial killer.
No.
Well, some would argue that.
And there's nothing comparable to what the Catholic Church refers to as venial sins.
Right. So I think in that case, if you could make the case that negligence on that level amounted to something that was in fact criminal, and if you or I did it, there's no doubt it would be, like a third degree manslaughter, something like that, gross negligence, willful disregard for human life. It would have to be a part of an impeachment proceeding, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you're making a good argument, Bob. And Bruce's question is a good one.
Well, I think please go ahead.
I was just going to say it's frightening because what it's consistent with is the idea of trying to get people out of the habit of looking to government to solve these kinds of problems. And yet the whole idea of government conceptually is that government's job is to address problems that individuals can't address. And when you're dealing with something like a pandemic, that's obviously a government issue. And for government to throw up its hands and say we can't really do anything about it is kind of a violation of what government's supposed to be all about, at least in my way of thinking.
Well, I agree.
Mm-hmm. I agree, too, and I think that, you know, at some point, and see, this is, and you know, guys, I can't help but just say, you know, this is the absolute end result of a system of government that has been largely dominated by the conservative party, which, you know, Grover Norquist, you know, the famous utterance about, you know, dragging government into the bathtub and drowning it, you know.
Right.
And so what we're seeing is, you know, until these guys are brought to bear, brought out of power, that, you know, what they're doing, one could call it incompetence, another one could call it crazy like a fox.
Yeah.
Incompetence by design.
Right.
And as a result, what happens with what's happened with Medicare D? I mean, I know we're sort of jumping around with topics here, but what's happened with Medicare D? What's happened with FEMA? What's happened with the Centers for Disease Control? All of these things have one thing in common, and that is that the government has made it such an unwieldy system to negotiate that people are turning away from that and going to private concerns rather than relying on what used to be the save-all of our society, which was the governmental system of Social Security,
right,
which was, you know, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or any number of other concerns, you know, and you know, the government is pushing people away. It's no longer there to serve us. It's trying to push us away and trying to, you know, dole the money out instead to those who already have the money.
It's kind of like those people who believe that government didn't work took over government, now they're going to use it to prove it. You know, I mean, really,
right,
what they're doing is they're proving that government can't do any of the things for its own citizens that all of us were raised to believe that a good government, a representative popular government, is supposed to do.
And that, in fact, such a government has done.
Right, right.
I mean, we're not talking about anything new here. Government has worked competently in the past, but thanks, Dr. Bill, to 20 years of a guy who turned out to be, an artificial heroin junkie, screaming on the airwaves that government can't do anything and the answer is in the private sector. You've got a substantial portion of the American population who, when Katrina came along, was more than willing to make excuses. And we have seen some of that, I think, as well in the inquiry regarding the Sago disaster right there at home. In particular, I've seen people interviewed who said, I'm just mad at the federal government because they couldn't get the rescuers in. And when you're at that point, that means you've completely given a pass to the employer whose reckless indifference to human life was the cause of the entire disaster.
That's right. You know, yesterday, Bob, and again, I'm not changing topics. I think that this is connected. Yesterday morning on the Today Show, Matt Lauer interviewed the new CEO of ExxonMobil, whose I believe his name was Rex Tillerson, I believe. And in the course of the questioning, and he was asking questions that people had sent in on the internet, on the website, his final question to the CEO of ExxonMobil was about the gasoline prices and the exorbitant profits that ExxonMobil is realizing. And Matt Lauer said basically, raised the issue about the possibility that ExxonMobil could forego some of the extreme profits that they're realizing now in the interest of pouring that back into the industry itself in order to lower gasoline prices so that people that are really having trouble could make it. And Tillotson's response was, ExxonMobil's principal job is to make money, not take care of people. Our primary responsibility is to make money for our stockholders, not anything related to a social conscience. And I really reacted to that for a number of reasons. One is that I was thinking about the issue of unions themselves. Basically, what he's saying is people have no alternative except to organize and take care of themselves. That's one thing. But the other thing is that traditionally, the Supreme Courts have always interpreted the Constitution based on the idea that certain businesses are involved with what they used to refer to as the public interest. And if businesses were involved in something related to the public interest, that meant that government had some say in what they did and how they did it. And what this guy is saying is that basically the only responsibility that ExxonMobil has is to make money for its stockholders. And basically what he's saying is, and the only alternative that people have is to make money for themselves. And I find that very, very revealing, to be honest with you. It gets to the issue that you've been talking about of health care. It gets to the issue of whether government has a legitimate role to provide for the legitimate needs of its own population, of its own citizens. And we have an administration in power that is committed to the idea that government should not have that role and cannot perform it well. And basically what they're doing is taking their own failures and using them as a justification for the fact that government can't perform. It's a disgrace.
It is a complete disgrace. I know that we are hammering right up against a break. It's about 18 minutes after the hour. You're listening to a special edition of Head On with Bob Kincaid. My name is Bruce Birch. The gentleman you just heard talking is Dr. Bill O'Brien, who is a professor here of history and also a former radio host on a station that shall not be named. And Bob Kincaid's down in Alabama. And ladies and gentlemen, we will be right back. If you want to get on our radio program, you can do so by dialing 1-877-443-2366 or sending us an email to bob@headonradio.com or bruce@brucebirch.com. We'll be right back.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2 new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Please listen to me, Marvin Hamlisch. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye, baby, by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball, while gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Parents, did you know that high school dropouts make 42% less than graduates? Someone will have to make up that difference, and chances are, that will be you. That means paying 42% of their groceries.
Ooh, more candy.
42% of their dentist bills.
No more candy.
Even 42% of their therapy sessions.
It's all my dad's fault.
Save your money. Encourage your kids to stay in school. For help and advice, call 877-FORA-KID. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, "What if?" Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
That's the place where I traced my bloodline, and it's there I read on a hillside gravestone, "You'll never leave Harlan alive."
This is a very special edition of Head On, a Head On Radio Network showcase. I'm Bob Kincaid. Joining us in the Raleigh County Armory in Beckley, West Virginia, Bruce Birch and Dr. Bill O'Brien. This has been a steady progression, a discussion of all things cultural in many, many ways. We have discussed constitutional law. We have talked about the medical crisis, the medical care crisis in this country. We have discussed the general failures of the Bush administration. We have discussed, in particular, the administration's rather the cynical attitude toward government's ability to meet the needs of the people. And that being the case, I think the next place we take it, guys, and anyone who wants to jump in, by the way, at 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. The next place we have to go, I think, is an accountability issue. And by that, I mean we criticize the Republican Party for its excesses and its negligence and its carelessness and its heartlessness and its overall, frankly, homicidal cruelty. And that being the case, the next question doesn't it has to be, who would let something like that go on? And beyond the electorate, I'm talking about our own party. I'm talking about the Democratic Party. By way of example, there was a debate on the ethics Band-Aid that the Republicans are pushing in Congress. And what I saw in that debate yesterday, the Republican side was led by Stephen Dreyer, David Dreyer, from California, and but he had an array. He had an absolute array of Republicans ready to stand up and talk about how this bill it was going to clean up Washington. The Democratic side of the debate was led by Congresswoman Slaughter, do you have anyone else who wishes to speak? And she kept, it was embarrassing. She kept having to say, well, I'm hoping that some of my people will show up. I'd like to reserve my time until they do. Could we please do that? And, guys, I was angry. I was hurt. We keep talking, you know, we talk about the democratic principles that involve fighting back against things that are clearly wrong. And am I to understand that this party that wants to take back power in November of 2006 can't even be bothered to show up for a debate on something as easy? I mean, a slam dunk. The Republicans wouldn't even mention Duke Cunningham's name. It was like something out of the Ten Commandments where Ramses was saying, no longer let the name Moses be spoken in the land of Egypt. They wouldn't even say Duke Cunningham's name. This should have been embarrassing to them, and we couldn't even muster up enough Democrats to drive the nail. Am I off base on that, or is there a way to put some starch in the shorts of the Democratic Party?
If I may, Bob, I think there's a couple of things at play. The first thing being that the Democratic Party of late has decided that the best course of action is to let the conservatives. I don't like using the word Republicans. I just don't. But to let the conservatives. Because that's what they are. There's, you know, con, and then, you know, anyway, is to let them implode. And I've read a number of documents that indicate that this strategy of non-strategy is intended to say, see, we pretty much have stayed the same the entire time. This party has the power and has completely imploded. You need to trust us because we're the ones who are the old standby. Come on back to the Democratic Party. We're here, you know, and we're not going to, you know, create a stir. We're just going to be who we are. And that's everything that I've read has indicated that the distinct lack of action or the inaction, purposeful inaction, is the strategy at this point.
Bruce, I think you're right. I think that there is a perception out there. I've heard some pretty good commentators and columnists address this. Is the fact that the solution or the hope for the Republicans is that the Democrats will say something which gives the Republicans something to attack, something that will take the visibility away from their own failures. And the Democrats aren't giving it to them. But I have a problem with this, and I think Bob does too, the very nature of the question.
I think all three of us do.
Yeah. I mean, if you're looking at it only from a political point of view and you're saying, I'm not going to give the other side anything political that they can attack, then basically what you're saying is we don't stand for anything other than winning. And I don't like to believe that the Democratic Party, I don't like to believe either party believes that. But unfortunately, it's beginning to look like that may be true.
It does look that way, Dr. Bill. And one of the things that we've talked about, and I hope we've got a break coming up, when we come back, this question of accountability, I think, arises. And with in that vein, how do we demand more accountability? How do we demand certain actions of our party if they do in fact return to power? This is a very special edition of Head On, a Head On Radio Network showcase. in Alabama. I'm Bob Kincaid in Beckley, West Virginia, at the Raleigh County Armory. Bruce Birch and Dr. Bill O'Brien, when we come back, that's on the table. This is Head On.
Have you heard the tales of the oldest woman in these hills? Lost her husband, lost her land. Ask her about it, and she says, I watched the train cars haul away the most beautiful place in the world.
There was dirt, water, and air, and it was good. Once, Planet Jack. Planet Jack.
With gas prices skyrocketing at the pump, there is a cheap renewable alternative fuel.
Rudolph Diesel actually designed the diesel engine to run on vegetable oil over 100 years ago.
A diesel engine that runs on used vegetable oil?
We get the used vegetable oil from fast food restaurants.
It's called biodiesel.
I got a biodiesel.
Joshua Tickle, author of From the Fryer to the Fuel Tank, explains.
Biodiesel is a clean-burning diesel fuel that's actually made from vegetable oil. It's usable in any diesel engine. You don't have to modify the engine. You just pour biodiesel right into it.
Pour some veggie fuel into that tank.
The environmental benefits of biodiesel are that it's cleaner, it's healthy for humans, plants, and animals.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
Hi, I'm Janice Ian. Do you remember how excited you were at the start of summer every year and how the summer just started to drag on after a few months and you couldn't wait to get back to school, see your old friends, make new friends, get new books and a new locker and a clean slate? Well, you should have been excited about music class, too, because that was a special room where you went to sing, perform with your friends, and learn all kinds of interesting stuff about great composers, instruments, different kinds of music and songs. We remember our music teachers because they were so passionate about helping us learn to love music. They helped to spark a love for listening to notes and voices and rhythms that continues to enrich our lives even today. I bet your kids feel the same way about music class. Ask them, and make sure they get involved with music in school and in their lives.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
Hello, I'm Martin Sheen. When I was growing up in Dayton, Ohio, I had an unforgettable mentor who believed in me and encouraged me to pursue my dreams. Today, there are millions of children across this country waiting for a mentor to help them. Improving the world starts with one child. Please, become a volunteer mentor for Mentoring USA. Give children the chance to develop and flourish and share in the future that belongs to them.
Edition of Head On with Bob Kincaid, brought to you through the Head On Radio Network, which you can go and check that out by going to headonradionetwork.com. And we're also chatting live there at the Head On Radio Network. So do come and check us out there. And just so you know, this special presentation where I am at the Raleigh County Armory at the 13th Annual Beckley Raleigh County Chamber of Commerce Business Expo is being brought to you by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. And these guys are sitting right next to me, and they are busy. They're even busy here. It's really amazing. They got a table full of pencils, and they got drawings, and they're just going nuts over there. Isn't it great, Bill?
Yeah, it is. It really is. There's been a lot of people stopping over there.
Ooh. I know. And they're not stopping here because, you know, they see us talking and they're like, we can't stop because we don't want to bother them.
They don't even make eye contact.
Yeah. It's them liberals.
Yeah, they're on live. Uh-oh.
Bruce, you did
Bobby
shower
still
this morning.
Yes. Of course I did. And I even bathed in cologne. So...
Smelling but, like a belligerent rose.
We were talk- we were talking about before we went over to the went off to that break. Bob, why don't you pick it up there? Because I think you were trying to tie together a number of different concepts that we were talking about, and I'm going to let you do that.
Well, one of the things that and I really want Dr. Bill's thoughts on this, and anyone who feels like chiming in on the phone too, 877 the number 4 head on 877-443-2366. As a Democrat, it has been said on my program in the evening on a number of occasions, I'm going to stay a Democrat. Because the Republican Party is morally and ethically dead, and they are beyond redemption. We have an opportunity to change the Democratic Party and get it back from the dark, spidery places where it has been taken. As a Democrat, I intend, when the Democratic Party regains the majority in the House of Representatives and in the Senate, I intend to be harder, from a personal standpoint, harder on a Democratic majority than I ever dreamed of being on a Republican one. Because we must learn that we can rely upon our elected representatives again. We have had a long, disastrous period of learning, of being taught, as we were talking in the previous segment, about the fact that there is a cabal, if you will, in this country that wants us to think that we can't rely on government. We must demand accountability of those elected representatives, and when they do get to power, we have got to talk to them and demand certain things of them. And I guess the question is, what is that list? What level? What are the things that we are going to demand accountability of the Democratic Party on? Well, that's tortured grammar. But Dr. Bill, would you like to take a run at that?
there's a lot of places we can go with that, Bob, but I think one of them we talked about earlier, which is healthcare. I really believe this. I think that in this society, if you believe that healthcare is a absolute requirement for everybody, and if there are substantial numbers of your people who, for one reason or another, can't have it, can't afford it, or whatever, then it seems to me government's responsibility to provide it. And that's what really bothers me about this issue of the role of the Democratic Party. It seems like the Democratic Party has lost its way in that, for political reasons, it's uncertain what it should stand for anymore. And, you know, and I really believe that part of this, I really believe, lays at the feet of Bill Clinton. I think Bill Clinton brought the party to the center with the idea that that's the way to win elections. But the only way to get to the center is to smooth your edges and lose your edge, as it were, in that you become another form of Republicans, I guess is what I'm saying. And I think that, you know, you got a few people out there, the Russ Feingolds and the candidate, Bob, that you had on the radio from Ohio. Kucinich. I mean, those people are still mouthing the philosophy of the Democratic Party. And I think when we talk about people who manipulate data in order to win elections, we're talking about people that stand for things.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you know, one of the things that is, I think, reprehensible, I mean, you know, I think all of us, all three of us, and actually probably everybody listening to this program right now, agrees that without integrity, what do you have? You have a shell of what you could be.
If you win and you don't stand for anything, what have you won? I mean, what do you do? And that's my concern is that we don't have anybody articulating a set of standards. And I think that's what Bob asked. You know, what are these things that a Democratic majority ought to stand for and ought to implement or try to implement? I think one of them is health care. I think the other thing is going back to the old idea of a legitimate substantive relationship between the citizenry and government itself. I think, in other words, trying to undo and overcome this idea that people ought not to look to their government for anything. I think that's very, very dangerous.
I agree. Bob?
Well, again, it is a long list. I believe health care is critical. The timing, I believe, also informs a lot of this, because the minute that the 2006 elections close, the minute that it becomes apparent that the Republicans have lost their majority in Congress, then the real fight's going to begin, because the minute the 2006 election closes, it's all going to become about the 2008 election.
Right.
And as a result of that, it's going to become very easy for a lot of things to get lost in the shuffle. Healthcare is one of them. We have been on the air now for a little more than an hour and a half, and we have managed, and frankly, I'm surprised. I mean, I'm not trying to drive any particular agenda, but we have avoided what I think is the elephant in the room. And that is the warlike tendencies of this administration.
Right.
We not only have to get our troops out of Iraq, but we have to start demanding that we not start World War III in Iran. And that is a very real possibility. One of my callers last night, our very good friend Bob in North Dakota, who is in close proximity to some significant military bases there, was talking about seeing them changing the bomb racks in B-52 bombers. And for a guy who has a handle on military matters, that struck him as being profound and terrifying.
Right.
Because you can't, you know, the same racks that you use to drop 500,000 pound bombs on villages, be it the desert or Vietnam, though you can't use the same rack to drop, say, a nuclear device or two. And, you know, how high on the list does stopping this administration's propensity for destabilizing the entire globe, where does that fall into the mix?
Wow, Bob.
Bob, listen, next time, ask questions that might be easier. No, I'm just playing. You know what? You're absolutely right. That is the elephant sitting in the middle of the room. If we have it, we have a current administration that is hell-bent on destruction. The problem is that in the middle of all of its destruction, it's also self-destructing to a certain degree, because now I'm going to go into an esoteric place for a moment. And that is that when you bring negative energy to bear and you are creating the kind of atmosphere of death and destruction and pain that this administration that follows this administration around wherever it goes, whether it's Iran, whether it's Iraq, it doesn't really matter. Wherever they go, there's always something negative that's happening as a result. And, you know, when you have that to bear, you can't help but self-destruct to a certain degree. To me, the Democrats can sit back and wait, watch this happen, or they can facilitate it. And in my mind, Bob, what you're talking about and the warlike tendencies, this gentleman he brought, not gentleman, what am I saying? This president.
You're being esoteric.
I mean, that was a totally faux pas. This guy brought to, you know, when he moved into the White House, you know what he did? He immediately brought all of these busts of wartime presidents and put them in the Oval Office, and he considered himself a wartime president before we even went to war. I remember watching a Windows Media file of him giving a tour of his office, and this was in 2000. This is like the summer of 2001. This is before September the 11th, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he showed all of these wartime presidents, their plaster busts or marble busts or whatever. And, you know, all of the pictures on the walls were pictures of battle scenes from, like, the Battle of New Orleans or the Battle of Gettysburg or whatever. I mean, he walked into this presidency with the idea in mind to create as much, havoc as possible. Because with havoc, then people want power to come in and provide stability, you know. Because people want to be, we want to feel stable. We want to feel safe. We want to feel all these, you know, wonderful things. And if enough instability is created, then we will turn to some other force to say we want stability. And I believe that this government or this president, you know, has created an atmosphere for that to happen.
You know, we were talking what seems like a short time ago, but it's been well over an hour ago, about the unitary executive and about the whole issue of executive power. And ultimately, when you think about it, the whole point behind executive, the growth in executive power is military, is military power. I mean, that's really what it's about. You can talk about the idea of obeying and not obeying laws and all the rest of it, but ultimately, the old idea of the, of power corrupting is real. And once you begin, once you claim and aren't challenged for that power, you exercise it.
Okay, we are hammering up against another break. It's about 44 minutes past the hour. You are listening to a special presentation of Head On with Bob and Dave. And this is Duke Hirsch, and the gentleman you just heard was Dr. Bill O'Brien. And Bob's down in Alabama, and we're having a jolly good time today,
yeehaw.
I would say. Yeehaw! This, you know, just so that you know, this presentation is being brought to you under the auspices of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream, and we're talking about it. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to get in on the radio program, you can do so by dialing 1-877-443-2366, or you can email. You can email Bob at headonradio.com, or you can email Bruce at brucebirch.com. We'll be right back.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
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 Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible, a cereal box, want your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
I'm just a kid.
I'm six.
I'm nine.
I'm four and a half.
And I've got asthma.
You know just how upset I can get when I have an asthma attack.
And I know that you want to do all that you can do to help me.
But you might not know
about all the different stuff that can make me have an asthma attack.
Or all the simple things you can do to fight my asthma.
You can fight it with a bear.
You can fight it with a duck.
You can fight it with a wrench.
Put my teddy bear in the freezer to wipe out dust mites.
Dry off rubber duckies and fix leaks to get rid of mold.
Cause mold can start my asthma attacks too.
Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Thanks for doing all you can to help me out.
Because I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
Planet Church.
Planet Check.
He's the granola Ayatollah of canola. Charles Ford, founder of Grassoline Solutions, explains.
I just started writing rhymes while I was farming and doing the eco thing, so that's kind of how this all came about.
Ford spits the truth.
Now, Rudolph Diesel was no weasel, this we know to be true. He was an engineer and a humanitarian, too. He made it possible for us to drive on vegetable fuel. Nobody told him that, well, that's what I'm trying to do. It was back around the turn of last century when Dr. Diesel offered up this opportunity. Corn, soy, chicken, fat, some flour, flax, hemp, seed. Farmers could grow their own fuel, not only their feed. Small towns could be self-sufficient about their energy needs without drilling or selling or paying a fee. It's like that.
Biodiesel reduces cancer-causing emissions by 75%. For more EcoWrap and all the 411 on biodiesel,
Grassoline.com. Check us out.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
All right, we're the hottest. We're back on special edition of Head On Radio with Bob Kincaid. Bob is down in Alabama. This is Bruce Birch, and I am the anchoring, I guess you would say, the remote location at the 13th Annual Commerce Business Expo at the Beckley at the Raleigh County Armory in Beckley, West Virginia, which is being presented by the Beckley Raleigh County Chamber of Commerce. And sitting in with me is Dr. Bill O'Brien, who is and former radio host for a station that shall not be named. And we were talking about, before we went over to the break, we were talking about a number of different things, but not the least of which is the negativity that the Bush administration has brought to our everyday living. Bob, are you still with us?
I'm right here.
I know Bill is. He's sitting right next
yeah.
to me.
Yeah, I'm here. we were talking about negativity. We were also talking about the militarism that's associated with the administration, and to go back to the issue of power, I think, you know, really, there's no question that the ultimate danger of power is that those with it feel the need to use it. And the fact that we have an administration that's claiming more and more power all the time is frightening because, as Bob pointed out, if you look at what it's done, what did they call it, the 800-pound gorilla in the room is... You know, is Iraq and Afghanistan and what might happen in Iran and all of these other things. I mean, that's really the danger.
Well, Dr. Bill, let me ask you real quick. There's something that we have been talking about from time to time on my program. I think Bruce has mentioned it as well on All Things Reconsidered on Sunday nights and as well as on Fourth Estate Radio on Saturday nights. There is a video out there. I think I may have sent the link to you called Ha 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 America. It's at Sundance.org, and it's in the 2006 entries of the Sundance Film Festival. Have you had a chance to see that?
No, I haven't, Bob.
I think you would find yourself quite amazed to watch this because, in conjunction, you know, if we're going to talk about the war in Iraq and we're going to talk about the hopefully not impending war in Iran, you can't do that without a discussion of energy. And what I saw in that particular very, very compelling film strip may explain a whole lot of the Bush administration's motives. You know, at the beginning of the war, it was said, you know, this is about oil. In fact, back at the beginning of the war, Ari Fleischer stood there and announced Operation Iraqi Liberation, and that lasted precisely one press conference because they figured out it spelled oil.
Yeah,
and that's when it became Operation Iraqi Freedom. But we thought it was about the oil, and it gave the conservatives a chance to say, "Ha ha! See the gasoline's more expensive. That means it wasn't about the oil." But when you watch something like Ha 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 America, you find out it was about the oil, but it's not about us getting more of it. It's about the Bush administration's cronies controlling the flow of it in large part. To the giant economies emerging both on the Indian subcontinent and in communist China. With that in hand, if we're going to tie this together with some discussion of democratic accountability, Do you believe that, and all the things that have to be done by a Democratic majority, where do we bring into play our relationship with East Asia, among other things, with the fact that you can't walk into Walmart and buy American, with the fact that we're outsourcing ourselves to death. Where does it is there a nexus there?
Well, you raise some really good questions. I'm thinking about three or four different things at the same time here. As far as the energy is concerned and controlling the flow of oil, I think there's absolutely no question that. As far as the Democratic Party is concerned, if I have a concern about looking at it from the perspective of energy, it's really difficult to separate Democrats and Republicans too easily on this issue, because I think oil has controlled both of the major parties. In fact, Tom Friedman, among others, is really lobbying for the emergence of a third party based on energy. I mean, if you've read his pieces recently in the New York Times. And his basic premise is that there's not that much difference or enough difference between Democrats and Republicans to really address the energy needs not only of our society but of the world as a whole. I mean, I think what we're talking about is some way to control the distribution of energy so that all nations who would use it to grow can benefit from it. And obviously the person that, as you point out, the person who controls that controls the world. I mean, that's really, from that perspective, that's what this is all about.
So in that case, then, as we look at the stance on Iran, I'm afraid to say that it almost seems that it doesn't matter. Well, just as it didn't matter what Saddam did in terms of disclosing that he had no weapons, we know now that, boy, isn't this weird? Saddam was telling the truth. I'm afraid it doesn't matter what Iran says either, because controlling those Persian oil fields would give the United States and the people who support George Bush a much greater stranglehold on the rest of the world.
That's right. That's right. And the fact of the matter is, it's unclear in Iraq how this whole thing is gonna play out. But the fact of the matter is that there's not enough that has happened to dissuade me from believing that this is still about oil. Nothing's happened to dissuade me from that. And when you look at Iran, it's the same thing. Iran is the second major oil producer in the world right now. So, I mean, there's that connection. So, by regime change, first in Iraq and then in Iran, and that's what we're calling for is regime change. We're creating a situation where we're instigating regime change in those areas of the world that control the bulk of its oil. And I can't get away from that. I just don't know whether that issue is so big that our controversy between Democrats and Republicans for elections and for seats in Congress is enough to even address that issue. I think that issue is so big that it just overwhelms our political, our two-party system.
Well,
I would agree.
Yeah. If that's the case, Doctor.
I don't know whether.
Please go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Bob. I was waiting for you.
Well, no, I was just going to ask then, and then this comes back to a recurring theme on my program. For a long time, we treated the Republicans as and Karl Rove, evil genius. We did everything but build him a set with the Tesla coils and give him the lab coat and have him howling ha 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 ha. Evil. We elevated him to evil scientist status. But I'm beginning to wonder, just based on my thin abilities to look at the future, and perhaps we can talk about this when we come back from the break. This recurring question I have, are these people evil geniuses, or are they really not so smart? I think it's a legitimate question. When we come back, we'll have a run at it. You're welcome to join in the conversation as well. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. This is Head On, a special roundtable showcase edition of Head On, coming to you live from the Beckley Raleigh County Armory, as well as the last little foothills of northwest Alabama. Bruce Birch, Dr. Bill O'Brien are in Beckley. I'm in Alabama. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
Head On. He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head On with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember it. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts, the issues of the day. Head On. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click On Air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head On.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
Apparently, on the right-hand side, on the right wing, the leadership in the Republican Party is not so cozy with the pro-life movement. They say pro-life. That's bull. If they were pro-life, they wouldn't send people to die in battle. If they were pro-life, you know, they would put money into a temporary aid for needy families, TANF, which is an entitlement. If they were pro-life, they would help with creating better pensions for us to live our remaining years in relative peace and serenity rather than having to work until you're 85 years old in order to make a living. If they were pro-life, if they were really, really pro-life, then we wouldn't be in the middle of a war. Bottom line.
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Lottie in the chat room has fixed himself some stuffed pork chops with apple raisin walnut chutney.
You, me, Grace, Rama.
Mango chutney.
Hey, speaking of that,
it's all you need.
Mustard seed?
Mustard seed. Yeah, that article.
It's not the same as mustard gas.
Well, it's pretty close. Mustard gas.
Join
mustard
Grace
gas
and Rama, Homebodies, Sunday evenings, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network. It's food for thought.
Stay.
special daylight edition of Head On. This is a Head On showcase. I'm Bob Kincaid in Alabama, up in West Virginia, in the wild, wonderful hills at the Raleigh County Armory. Our good friend Bruce Birch. Say hello. Say hello, Bruce. Okay. And our good friend Dr. Bill O'Brien, also joining us this this afternoon. It's afternoon here. I mean, cut me a break. What are you going to say? We're worldwide. We are worldwide. And as we go through this, it's worth mentioning the other programs on the Head On Radio Network. Just to remind you, please be listening whatever your particular time zone is. 10 p.m. Eastern Time Saturday night for Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox, our good friend. Also joined by Bruce Birch, Fourth Estate Radio. Prior to that, at 8 p.m., Joe Vecchio, live from Atlanta, Georgia, and the Cup of Joe radio show, also followed by Sunday at 8 p.m., Grace and Rama and Homebodies, and at 10 p.m., Bruce Birch and All Things Reconsidered. Beginning coming into the top of the hour, we had discussed. I put out on the table the question as to whether or not we have overestimated the Republican Party and their political machine in the form of the veneration, the seeming veneration that we gave to the Republicans in the form of, according to them, almost evil genius status. And as we've watched them fall apart in the last year or so, I've come to the conclusion that we did overestimate them. We gave them more credit than they were deserving of. That, in fact, they're not very smart. If you look at things time and time and time again, what you find is that they, beyond those few things that we got from, you know, in terms of you know, God, gays, guns, big rocks in buildings, killing countries that happen to have brown people in them, they're not so sharp.
No, they're doing the
same thing with Iran that they did with Iraq. They don't even have the common good sense to come up with something new. So, guys, if you're inclined to do so, your thoughts, please.
Bob, you know, it's interesting. I think one of the problems that has occurred, and again, it's a question of whether they're smart or not smart. I think that what they've done is they've assumed that they have the answers to the questions. And they've operated accordingly. And what really concerns me is they've stifled any alternatives to what they're doing. I mean, they're basically doing everything they can to stifle alternative points of view. And, for example, this is not original, but if you look at the oil crisis that we're confronting right now with the price of gasoline, for example, if you look at the nations of the world that produce the bulk of the oil, we're at odds with all of them.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And given the hostile way that we've approached the world, the very militaristic way that we've approached the world, we're basically driving the people who are sitting on the oil away from us. And that suggests, to me, almost a blind belief that there's only one way to solve problems, and they're doing it, and they can't understand why the other people in the world are not responding positively. It really bothers me about that.
Well, Dr. Bill, is it then a case of when all you have is hammers, all your problems are going to look like nails?
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt.
That's a great way to put it. I think that's it, Bob. From my perspective, I've come to the conclusion that that seems to be the way. They feel that the only way that you address problems is from a position of strength. What that does is imply that there's really no credibility and no justification at all with those who don't agree with you or who don't buy into what you're talking about.
Bill,
and so in essence, you just irritate everybody.
Well, Bill, I don't want to say strength, because strength to me is the word strength to me is not a bad word. I would say from a position of power.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I meant. Almost military might.
Right.
Almost from a bullying perspective.
Exactly. I mean, and actually, this guy, this Bush and his friends, equally, in the past, I believe. You look back across, what has Karl Rove done but bully everybody he's ever come into contact with?
Right.
What has Dick Cheney done but bully everyone he's ever come into contact with? I mean, he told Patrick Leahy to go have sexual relations with himself on the floor of the Senate.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So the only way that they operate is by fear and intimidation and by bullying.
Right. And they totally destroy or set out to destroy anybody that disagrees with them. Now they're having problems because more and more people are surfacing. Today's LA Times has a piece in there by William Odom, who was NSA director under Reagan,
okay,
who does an analysis of Iraq and basically says we got to get out. It's just a hole that gets deeper and deeper, and we have the shovel, and all we keep doing is digging and digging and digging. So I really believe that that we're addressing our problems by approaching the world from one perspective, and it's not working. And our only alternative from that perspective is to try to conquer it, to bully it into submission, conquer it, regime change if they don't. And it can't work, especially with the energy crisis, because the bulk of the energy is controlled by nations that are dictatorships or authoritarian regimes that we don't buy into. I guess Norway would be the only alternative, the only one that doesn't fit that bill.
Well, you really make me wonder, Dr. Bill, because the other night in one of those open floor debates, I saw a congressman, oddly enough, a Republican. I mean, I fired off an email to him just saying, "Sir, why are you a Republican?" A man from Maryland named, I believe, Roscoe Bartlett.
Uh-huh.
And he stood up on the floor of the House and had chart after chart after chart after chart, actually, for the first time that I know of it being mentioned in the House, talking about peak oil. And in so doing, mentioned the fact that last year we launched 4 new warships and China launched 14. The idea that it comes back to this, how smart are they? The idea that we think that our nation could bully China?
Right.
Yeah.
Could bully India? As that film I mentioned to you, Ha 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 America, notes, the population of the United States as compared to the population of the People's Republic of China is a rounding error. So how smart is anybody who thinks that they can bully those the people in those multitudes?
If we destabilize the Middle East and ultimately control the greatest source of oil right now, then ultimately we make China potentially dependent on our supply of oil. In other words,
exactly.
We make them play our game.
To fight for it.
And who's to say that that won't happen anyway? I mean, you know what I'm saying? I totally agree with you, Bill, though, in that regard. I mean, that's one of the things that I think, one of the analyses, if you will, that's sort of missing from the political talk radio landscape is the power that China is trying to wield right now. If you notice, the newly anointed king of it was Bahrain or Saudi Arabia or one of the countries right there. He was brought into power, and it's normal custom for these folks to come to the United States first. Well, instead, he went to China first. Mm-hmm. Very oil-rich nation. You know, one can only assume from that fact that the Saudis or those in the Middle East are already recognizing that China probably is a much better customer than we are, because China, it's my understanding also, is hoarding oil.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to store up these resources, you know, because, like it or not, as in Ha 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 America, Bob, as you mentioned, the Chinese are looking at the world in a much more longitudinal way than we are. We're more, at least based on everything that I've seen. Would you agree with that, Bob?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've long said that the problem with Republican policy is it seems to boil down to the notion of if they can't screw it or steal it, they just kill it.
Yeah.
And that's not going to work with China.
No.
And we're talking...
I go back to the fact that we obviously see China. When I say we, I mean the administration. I think all of us do. But as potentially... that the administration sees that as well, then their ultimate game plan is to find a way to render China dependent. And there's no question that right now controlling the supply of energy will do that.
Well, Dr. Bill, if I may, hasn't that trick been tried before? Didn't the British Empire do everything in its power literally to render China dependent via opium?
Yes.
And didn't that come to no good end?
Yes. Yes.
Well,
yes,
the opium wars, of course, yeah.
Yes, it did. But I think that given the potential competitiveness with China in the long term, I think that if I'm the administration right now, I see the instability in the Middle East as something that we can't tolerate. Because instability is something that China can take advantage of. So in essence, the only way to stabilize the Middle East is regime change and ultimately our ability to control it. And I don't necessarily mean physically.
Regime change where? Here?
Yeah, regime change in the Middle East.
Okay.
The other edge to that incredibly double-edged, sharp double-edged sword, Dr. Bill, is the fact that it seems that we have created the instability, have we not?
Yeah.
Well, and I sort of mentioned this earlier in the program, but I believe that instability, John Fox and I on Fourth Estate Radio, what we do in our radio program is dig up the stories that nobody else seems to want to talk about from all over the world. And one of the things that we've covered extensively was the fact that a lot of the instability in Iraq has been pointed right back at the U.S. and British, for lack of a better term, almost like COINTELPRO in the 60s, where agents were actually creating the chaos, mm-hmm. and to make the movements look badly. There have been a number of situations where car bombings, et cetera, have been traced back to explosives that are actually created by the Americans or by the British. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I do know we do need to get off to a break, though. And
let's
so,
do that.
I'm sorry?
Let's do that.
Let's do that. It's about 18 minutes after the hour. You're listening to a special edition of Head On Radio with Bob Kincaid. My name is Bruce Birch. We're here at the Raleigh County Armory for a business expo sponsored by the Beckley Raleigh County Chamber of Commerce. And we're here because the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights want us here. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back. If you want to get in on the radio program, please dial 1-877-443-2366. We'll be right back. Get high and watch them too. And here's what happened when they decided to cut loose. They headed down to Pool of El Paso. I swear they ran into a great big shot a man while robbing his castle. Bobby Sue took the money and run. Go on, take the money and run. Go on, take the money and run.
I'm just a kid.
I'm six.
I'm nine.
I'm four and a half.
And I've got asthma.
You know just how upset I can get when I have an asthma attack.
And I know that you want to do all that you can do to help me.
But you might not know
about all the different stuff that can make me have an asthma attack.
Or all the simple things you can do to fight my asthma.
You can fight it with a bear.
You can fight it with a duck.
You can fight it with a wrench.
Put my teddy bear in the freezer to wipe out dust mites.
Dry off rubber duckies and fix leaks to get rid of mold.
Because mold can start my asthma attacks too.
Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Thanks for doing all you can to help me out.
Because I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
What's it like?
What's it like?
It's lonely.
It's really lonely.
I miss my brother.
I miss my brother.
I'm surrounded by other people, but it's not the same.
I've got other people around me, but it's not the same.
It's pretty scary, but I don't let it rattle me.
It's scary around here, but I don't let it rattle me.
You always have to watch your back.
There's no one to watch my back.
I spend my whole day worried who's out to get me.
I'm always wondering who's out to get me.
But I can take care of myself.
But I can take care of myself.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
It's not like I have a choice.
It's not like I have a choice.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
Go to jail for a gun crime and your family serves a sentence with you. Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Hi, my name is Joanne and I have mannequinism. Well, I did have it, but I'm not a mannequin anymore. Doctors said over 75% of my body turned into plastic. They said it's because I wasn't active in my community. Because I didn't vote or volunteer or I don't know. All I wanted to do was cry, but I couldn't because I had plastic eyes.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
By Bruce Birch at the Raleigh County Armory for the Business Expo there in beautiful Beckley, West Virginia. Also joined by our very good friend, Dr. Bill O'Brien. This entire broadcast, as is the Head On Radio Network as a whole, brought to you by the thousands of members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. The phone number, if you want to get involved, 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. And a quick little notice. I'll mention this again on the show tonight, but the evening show, Head On with Bob Kincaid, you know me, will be live and remote from beautiful downtown Florence, Alabama, tomorrow evening, as we talk to folks in and around the Shoals area of Alabama about what they're seeing, what they're feeling in the nation today. And as I've noted before, it's getting kind of interesting because the number, I'm just not seeing that many of those W stickers anymore here in the heart of Dixie, where once upon a time, you know, you couldn't swing a dead rat without hitting a George Bush sticker. Joining
rat.
Us on the phone
Come on,
right
Bob,
now.
A dead rat? Come on, man. What? Okay, well, okay. We
okay, I'm being rough on the rats.
You know what,
joining us on the phone right now, a good friend, Eugene Feinerman, satirist, humorist, and all around good guy and good Democrat. Eugene, are you with us?
Oh, barely. We have a lot of static, I guess. You know, the NSA may not like what I say. And I don't know if I'm really a good Democrat. I mean, I'm a Democrat because I prefer fools to fiends.
I like that line very much, and it rather resonates and speaks to me too, Eugene.
I'm really having trouble hearing. I'm sorry. I don't think it's tertiary syphilis.
No, I don't think so either.
Okay. Anyway, do I sound clear to you?
You're sounding great, Eugene.
Okay. In any case, I want to defend the honor of Karl Rove.
Please do.
You underestimate the man. You know, as I said, we don't know what he's got planned. I think he's going to have some. He's going to rationalize the oil shortage, explaining that it's caused by gasoline consumption is caused by people going to gay weddings. And he probably has an idea that, in time for the election, he's going to suggest that we allow Hispanics into the country and we simply expel gays. You know, he'll refer to them as unnatural aliens.
Oh, God.
And, I mean, you can rationalize, that if you replace Hispanics, with gays, or gays with Hispanics, I should say, I mean, lawn services for hairdressers, I mean, it both involves basically the same, utensils, cutting. And, also, it will be, because Hispanics are willing to work for less, I mean, think of how much, lower Broadway tickets will be.
Oh, without a doubt, and the off-Broadway stuff even lower.
Yes. So, there's a rationale. And he also has, demographics on his side. I mean, remember, Torquemada was Hispanic, too.
I thought that was Alberto Gonzalez, Eugene.
Well, there's no reason you can't have reincarnation. But, and indeed, there's no reason actually Torquemada could not serve on the Supreme Court. I mean, the physical handicap of being dead for five centuries is not eliminated, precluded from the Constitution. And in fact, right now, I'd say Scalia is doing an excellent job of channeling him anyway.
That was exactly where I was going, Eugene.
Yeah.
Now, I also think you have been unkind to, the neoconservatives, and their visions for a new world order. Remember, they were all champion risk players at Cornell.
See, Eugene, I've made the observation from time to time that I don't think any of them have ever actually played risk, because if you've been in one of those all night sessions, involving the risk board, probably a couple of bags of peanuts, a few cans of beer, you understand some real geopolitics that I don't think these guys get.
I'm getting bad static where you're saying, but they have this vision, that they can simply remake the world, simply with, dice. The world, I think that so far they've done a splendid job, turning, Iraq into Norway, so there's no reason they can't transform Iran into Sweden. It's just a question of the superior will. Mind you, most of the neocons don't look exactly Nietzschean Aryans, but, it's just a question of willing themselves. They will simply assert themselves. And we've been really, I would say the American public has actually been quite complacent. I mean, we let them basically take the election of 2000. The media has, been more than compliant. In fact, we might as well just accept the fact that the monarchy is back. In 2000, the Supreme Court basically undid, the American Revolution and reestablished the hereditary rule of upper class twins.
That is a Eugene upper. Yeah, upper class twits. And upper-class twits, they can be dangerous sometimes when you let them play with, they're running with scissors right now, aren't they?
With more than scissors, unfortunately. But, it's ironically, being an upper-class twit was part of our command dude's charm. He reminds everyone of the drunken country squire. I mean, they confuse his, shall we say, inebriation with actual affability. That was part of his charm. I mean, people thought it was endearing that he sounded like a fourth grader, as compared to Al Gore, who spoke as if we were all fourth graders.
That's part of the problem, Eugene.
Good comment. Now
you mentioned the issue of inebriation. I'm wondering, did America drink George Bush pretty? I mean, we've referred from time to time that this country is in bad need of an intervention. Is that what we're dealing with here?
Well, that's an interesting thought. I mean, is this just a big support group? I don't think so. I really, you know, first off, he feels that, you know, however he slurs his speech, you know, he has the divine right to do so. And compared to most of us, he has had 15 centuries more practice with English. So it's his language or slanguage, you know, to mispronounce as he wants.
Even when, and that, you know, I can't help but wonder, Eugene, we know now that it turns out that even though he thinks the national anthem should be sung in English only, he was singing it in Spanish, 6 years ago?
Well, first off, our national anthem can't be sung in any language. I mean, I think it really should be entitled the Cord Strangled Banner. Now, this is not to denigrate our, you know, the War of 1812, you know, and our brilliant, you know, conquest of Canada.
Not.
But, I apologize for disparaging a Democrat, James Monroe, you know, James Madison. But you have to admit, 1812 was a bad year to decide to ally yourself with Napoleon.
It really was. Really was.
You know what fascinates me? Every 4th of July, you know, so many bands, you know, will be throughout the country will be playing the 1812 overture as if it were our victory, you know, celebrating our victory at Lake Erie. Not quite.
No.
First off, it's celebrating the defeat of our ally at the time, France. It's hard to believe that
right.
We were once allied with that country. But, also the, you know, the jingoists, I don't think would really care that much for Tchaikovsky's sexual preferences.
Well, you know, we don't talk about Michelangelo that way either.
No, we don't. Or Leonardo, or, you know. You know, it's the curse of being great or artistic, I suppose.
But, you know, 1812 was not good. I mean, we kind of got the Capitol burnt down.
Well, that was in 1814. You see, after the Napoleon was first defeated, I mean, as far as Britain was concerned, America was about as great a danger to it as Bulgaria was to us during World War II.
Right.
I mean, they were a little more concerned about Napoleon than with James Madison. Now, after they defeated Napoleon in 1814, then they turned on the U.S. Up to that time, basically, it was the Canadian militia, you know, fighting a defensive war. But when Napoleon seemed safely, you know, imprisoned at Elba, slight miscalculation, they proceeded to, you know, launch a punitive expedition, and, you know, so much for Washington. Now, Baltimore held out, and there was a song to commemorate that. And then they had a disaster at New Orleans. But ironically, by that time, the war was already over. You know, just the British or the Americans didn't know it at the time.
Well, yeah, and it did generate a pretty nice little ditty. Eugene, awfully good to hear from you. We've got to hit our bottom of the hour break. Thanks very much for your thoughts.
Okay.
All right. Take care, Eugene. Our good friend Eugene Feinerman, satirist, humorist, and historical observationist extraordinaire. We do need to take a bottom of the hour break. I can't believe how the time has flown by. Just 30 minutes left in the program. If you want to jump in, 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. This is a very special edition of Head On, a showcase. I'm Bob Kincaid. Bruce Birch is in Beckley, as is Dr. Bill O'Brien. We'll be right back on the Head On Radio Network.
All this energy calling me. Lots of experts talk about the ways that schools should inspire students to be creative. How you doing? I'm John Prime. They say that helping young minds tap their creativity is just as important as mastering math or their English skills. And of course, all parents love to experience the joy of seeing and hearing something their child has created. Well, one of the best places creativity is actively encouraged is in music class. There you'll find kids working out a phrase in a choir part, learning technical stuff such as fingerings on an instrument, or even composing and arranging music on computers. Music classrooms are bursting with creative energy, just waiting to be explored by young minds. So don't let it go to waste. Support your school music program. Thank you.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
Planet Check. He's the granola Ayatollah of canola. Charles Ford, founder of Grassoline Solutions, explains.
I just started writing rhymes while I was farming and doing the eco thing, so that's kind of how this all came about.
Ford spits the truth.
Now Rudolph Diesel was no weasel, this we know to be true. He was an engineer and a humanitarian too. He made it possible for us to drive on vegetable fuel. Nobody told him that, well, that's what I'm trying to do. It was back around the turn of last century when Dr. Diesel offered up this opportunity. Corn, soy, chicken, fats, and flour, flax, hemp, seed. Farmers could grow their own fuel, not only their feed. Small towns can be self-sufficient about their energy needs without drilling or spilling or paying a fee. It's like that.
Biodiesel reduces cancer-causing emissions by 75%. For more EcoWrap and all the 411 on biodiesel,
Grassoline.com. Check us out.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Cliff Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
We're here discussing child development with some experts. Tell me the normal development of, say, a two-year-old.
My truck.
So a child that age should know 2 to 4 word phrases. Good. And what about cognitive development? Ah, engaging in pretend play. I see. And what of social
development? Look, Anna!
Being enthusiastic about the company of other children. All right, thank you.
It's time to change how we view a child's growth. It's not just physical. There are milestones your child should reach in how he plays, learns, speaks, and acts. A delay in any of these areas could be a sign of a developmental problem, even autism. The good news is, the earlier it's recognized, the more you can do to help your child reach his full potential. Talk with a doctor. Visit cdc.gov/act early or call 1-800-CDC-INFO. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Learn the signs. Act early.
All right, you're back on a special head-on with Bob McKay show today that we are broadcasting live from the Raleigh County Armory and beautiful Beckley, West Virginia. This special broadcast is being brought to you by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Man, they are building the American dream, and we're here to help them do it. Bob, I understand you had an email you wanted to share with us.
Yes, I did, Bruce. Just wanted to let Dr. Bill know that he's already reaching folks. Got a note here from someone who says they call me the hippie, and the hippie writes, how about the 6 o'clock news hour with a historical view by Dr. Bill? Thought you'd enjoy that, Bill.
6 in the evening or 6 in the morning? I guess with this medium, it could be either one, right, Bob?
Yeah, it's going to be 6 o'clock somewhere.
Somewhere, that's right.
That's right.
That's right.
It's always 4:35 somewhere around
yeah,
the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, it's really, you know, not to try to change this because we're getting close, I know, to the end of the program, but this thing about power and the unitary executive and all that stuff that we opened up with, very, very, the implication that a lot of people draw is that this is new and that the founders, you know, the founders knew very well what the dangers of a powerful executive were, and they were really worried about it, as we mentioned earlier. Washington was, the fact that George Washington was going to be the first president was the only thing that kind of relieved a lot of people's concerns.
He kind of, you know, basically, you know, helped people to see, okay, we're not going to go right back into a kingship again, I guess. I do know that we have Jim on line one. Jim, welcome back to the Head On Radio Special Extraordinary Show of the Week. How are you doing, man?
Oh, well, just listening to your conversation and the last caller of historical tour de force. And,
it certainly was. But.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, I think the original question was, are these people stupid or are they super intelligent and really dangerous? And I guess I'm going to have to come down in the middle of that. I think we are basically involved with the people who are very... oh, I hear the public address is engaged. Okay. These people are extremely clever in many ways, but yet their own cleverness has not exactly achieved good ends for this country. And in certain ways, they're being extremely stupid. I mean, and this is not something that's happened. This isn't the first time this has happened in history. I mean, you can look at other regimes in the past in other countries that have risen and fallen and caused the world a great deal of hardship, pain, and misery. And I hate to say it, but I think this current regime, and I refer to it as a regime, not an administration, because it has behaved like a regime, has basically behaved so recklessly that I would dare say that in the end result, that it could well be said that if in fact justice was done, certain leaders of it would stand in the dock. Because I can remember in ringing in my ears the words of Chief Justice Jackson at Nuremberg, who said, "We cannot ignore these mistakes lest they be repeated." Paraphrasing. Unfortunately, since he uttered those words, we've had hundreds of billions of people killed in so many, many other wars throughout that 1946. But nonetheless, I just wish we could learn. And America is supposed to be a country that's supposed to be the shining city on the hill. And unfortunately, it's just become, in my opinion, the worst of the slum. And we have what I consider to be slum leadership whose attitude towards the American people and their rich friend, and of course their own rich friends, has been one of some, like someone who's been drunk at Mardi Gras. And I think their motto has been, laissez bon temps rouler, you know, or let the good times roll. And the Republicans have been on this drunken spending spree, so-called fiscal conservatives, and just throwing the money away cheek after jowl. And we've lost 2,400 and some odd of our own men, and there are over nearly 18,000 that have been critically wounded. And that's just our side of the butcher's bill. And the other part of the butcher's bill are the countless Iraqis that have been destroyed. And with the destruction of those people has been the destruction of their goodwill and the destruction of the goodwill of the rest of the world as they look at this.
Well, Jim... if I may interject, you brought up Justice Jackson a moment ago. It's worth remembering also that Justice Jackson said the German people must understand that they are not being punished, or that their leaders are not being punished because they fought the war, but because they started the war. And when you talk about the goodwill of the Iraqi people, it's all part of the same cloth, is
now,
it not?
Who am I talking to? I can't hear you. You're breaking up so badly.
Oh, doggone it!
Well, Bob, you sound good here. I'm interested in this issue of whether they're smart or whether they're stupid. And Jim came down in the middle of that. Bob, what's your thinking on that? You raised the issue.
I've about come down to the point,
Dr.
Bill.
Sublime. Did you ask me, Dr. Brian?
Go ahead, Jim.
Go ahead, Jim.
Did you ask me or Bob? I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, it's okay. Please go ahead.
I just threw it out there, so it doesn't matter. Go ahead.
I feel that they're sublimely clever. And yet, at the same, at the same time, they are pursuing, you know, programs that are completely detrimental and inimical to the health of this country. And, you know, I was mentioning the other night this Patrick Henry University, in which they are taking these young people who've been homeschooled, and they have been literally brainwashing them in the ways of the religious right. And I guess it's their way, or they look at religion and the things that surround religion as their way or no way. But yet they are saturating our government in presidential interns and White House interns and interns in federal agencies with graduates of this particular institution. And so even beyond 2006 and 2008, and I'm repeating myself, I realize we have the seeds of their own ideology being sown to sprout further and to further metastasize. So in that, they are sublimely clever and at the same time hopelessly reckless. And they are like people who are walking around in a room filled with gunpowder with lit cigarettes.
Well, one thing you have to do, and again, the issue of whether they're clever or whether they're dumb, the fact of the matter is that many of the things that bother us, that convince us that they're doing things to this nation, which are incredibly serious, none of these things that we focus on tend to really worry them, which suggests that their agenda is deeper, or their agenda is something different other than what we're seeing, you know? And I think that in itself, to me, is scary, that it seems like many of the things that bother me about what's happening to our country, what's happening to our image, what's happening to our freedoms, what's happening to our optimistic way of looking at the future and all of these things don't seem to bother the people you're talking about, Jim, which leads me to believe that their agenda is, you know, is really scary because it's unclear.
Well, their agenda is very simple. They wish to establish economic, social, and physical hegemony over the remainder of the people who live in this country and over any other nation they can dominate. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I can see a definite parallel between our own course and that of the Third Reich in 1939. You know.
Well, and I realize you may have a hard time hearing me, Jim, but what you just said is so very real, and what you just defined to establish dominance over social, religious, energy, geographic, geophysical, to establish all of that dominance, there were a lot of people out there that didn't understand liberals when we were trying to explain to people about the dangers of the dominionist movement among the fundamentalists. But what you just described, Jim, is exactly the goal and exactly the aim of the dominionist movement, and that is who has control ultimately. It's the oil companies on one side, and it's the fundamentalist dominionists on the other, and they are making for a toxic mix.
Well, you know, I can't see too much difference between the Krupp family in Essen and the oil families in the oil industry in this country, and the role that it played in the history of Germany, and the role that the oil barons and Bush's oil friends are playing in the role in this country as well. You know, I think there's a definite correlation between the economic influence, and it's just a matter of the fact that what they want to do is to destroy everything that was set in place by President Roosevelt with the New Deal from 1933 on forward. They want to eliminate and destroy it, and they want to remake it in their own image, and they don't care who's hurt, and they don't care who suffers, and who lacks food, who lacks medication, or who is denied schooling, or whatever. They wish to promote an oligarchical type society. And, you know, when this happens, they're going to just bring the whole thing crashing down on their heads. And ours will.
I think, Jim,
I think, Jim, that they're, you know, that the eventual the result that they're looking for is an eventual return to the days of the robber barons and the unfettered economic prowess of the railroads and the oil barons and that kind of thing. And in a lot of ways we're there again. But I, Jim, I really do appreciate you calling in and being
no
a part of the program today.
Except there will be no Gilded Age this time.
I totally agree. Thanks, Jim, for calling in. We got to wrap it up. So
okay.
Maybe we'll hear from you again tonight, eh?
Who knows? You take care. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Okay,
thank
Jim. You. Jim, thank you, my friend.
And we are about.
Where does
to
the
leave
time
the
go, huh?
I know where it goes, Bob. It goes away.
Yeah.
it's out there on the stratosphere somewhere, floating around. Man, what a wonderful show it's been. Bill, Dr. Bill, let me shake your hand. Look,
fun,
this is the sound of one hand clapping. Okay. Now,
it's been great. I'll tell you one thing, as I think back on the last thing, the difference between this and everything else is everything else you listen to, they all have the answers. And we're basically speculating. I don't think there are too many people in media today who speculate about anything.
No, there aren't.
You know, that's interesting. Bob opened up by saying the difference between talk radio and conversation. And I think that's the difference. I really do.
What did you think about this today, Dr. Bell?
I thought it was fun. I thought it was wonderful.
Well,
I really did.
It's definitely a different paradigm, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. So, Bobby, you survived down there. You going to do 3 more hours tonight, Bob?
I got 3 hours tonight, Doc.
My heavens.
I might even help him do that 3. What do you think, Bob?
Hey, I think that could be a blast, Bruce.
So, tune back into our radio stream this evening for Head On with Bob Kincaid, and Bob will be on remote, and actually I think I might even be in studio tonight.
It's going to be the exact opposite of what it usually is. Opposite world. Hey, you're the one that talks about that all the time, Bruce.
Actually that's John Fox, but I'll take it. What the hell?
Yeah, well, you know, John's not here. You got to cover.
That's right. Bob, my friend, take us out, buddy.
All right. What a wonderful, wonderful afternoon this has been. I've the last time that I did conversation radio in the daytime, it was when Dr. Bill was off working diligently trying to teach history teachers to teach history back on terrestrial radio, and it's been a real trip. Dr. Bill, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. You've made it so very enjoyable. It's great to hear your voice again in this format. I hope everyone has enjoyed this as much as I have. The show today, of course, was produced by my lovely wife Agnes, who a couple of extra arms in the process. Tweaking dials and knobs and sliders and pots and answering phones. What an intrepid, wonderful, wonderful woman she is. Thank you, dear. Brian Reznor announces. Randy Kerbway is our engineer. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computers makes all the computer stuff work. And without him, I wouldn't have the little bit of hair left on my head that I do. Because it makes it so much more simple for a simple man like me to help make all of this stuff go with Peter's help. Of course, this program, this special Head-On Showcase program, and every program brought to you on the Head-On Radio Network happens as a direct result of the support of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Every day, rain or shine, they get up, they go to work, they build. In their thousands, they build the American dream, and in supporting the growth of this, the second liberal conversation network, the first conversation network, the second liberal one, in so doing, they're helping to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.